Councillor Lewis to provide a safety briefing before we begin.
Please note that we are on the third floor of this building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit through the door in the northeast corner of this room. It's over there. And you go down the steps to the second floor and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet at the courtyard outside the entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator. defibrillator. We have one of those, and it's mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue. A fire extinguisher is located in the corridor to the right of the dais as you leave the chamber.
Thank you, Councillor Lewis. If anyone wishes to testify on an item that is not on today's agenda item, now is the time to do so. It looks like we do have some cards. We have three cards, and again, if you would like to testify, fill out one of these blue cards, and we will call you up. We'll call up all three at once here. Sharon Nassett, Art Llewellyn, and Nanette Jones. Please come forward. Go ahead, Sharon. You have 3 minutes.
Good morning. Thank you, Councillor. Good morning, Councillors. I was going to wish the new elected people congratulations. I haven't been here yet. For the record, I'm Sharon Nassett, and I have come to here today to thank you for making comments having to do with the environmental assessment, having to do with I-84, I-5 interchange right out here. I'm sure you know from upstairs in that beautiful little office area, you can see that area really, really well. The little office? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. And so it gives you all kinds of ideas. In 2001, I was up there because I had put in alternatives into the I-5 Columbia River Cross, I-5 partnership, because it included I-84. I also did in the I-5 CRC, and then again once when they had another one. And today I thought I would have some of the alternatives here, but it was a confusion on the information I sent in. So I would like to comment mostly on the environmental assessment. The environmental assessment should have a build, no build option. And the no builds that they offered were actually no action. And the reason no build options are called options is because there are several things that you can do inside the right of way which do not change things necessarily on top that are called no build. There are also policy changes that can affect that are no build. There was also no baseline for safety. So no matter which component or alternative we have that was going to be studied, it will have these things as the base, this is where we're going, and these safety things will be looked at no matter what's compared. Instead, if you didn't name those safety items individually in an alternative, you could be marked off because it did not deal with that issue. So a baseline has to be established and was not. The alternatives, the no-build alternatives, and I'll just say today the experience I had when I got here, I had to go around and around and around and around to find a parking lot spot since 1:30 because of the event center. And the policies that we originated with the event centers need to be changed. At one time, Paul Allen did not allow buses from the outside areas to come in and drop off people at events because he wanted his parking lots full. Those parking lots are long full and it damages all the businesses in the area. It would be an advantage for the businesses out in the area to have park and ride packages for dinner, take a bus in, we drop you off, friends from your neighborhood, you come right back, and those type of alternatives. And unfortunately, they followed suit and they did the same with the Oregon Convention Center. People could go out into the area who are coming from out of the area and see businesses, develop those businesses, and come back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Council. I have some materials to submit today. Some of them are repeats. I have this latest design for proposing the post office rebuild. I've submitted an earlier design, and I have one which I think is a better view. It shows more of the context that the new site is, the buildings that are affected around them. So I think it's a better view and another way to look at it, so I wanted you to have a copy of that. I wanted to say that I don't come here just to address the council, but to whomever is behind us here in the room and who may be watching this on television. And for the public in general, I try to present a view that's important and I think represents not just myself, but those who will think along the same lines. That I want to say that I do support Metro and the philosophy of the regional planning. And I have to, this time still, make my case that the Barber Boulevard light rail project is a terrible mistake. And this is from a light rail supporter. And I'm not the only rail supporter who is saying this. So I want to say that I think that Metro only has one recourse, which I'm suggesting, that further studies of bus rapid transit be considered. Official, independent, more complete studies, because to me, my gut instinct tells me that Barber is more perfectly suited for bus rapid transit. I also think and suggest that the light rail corridor that could occur by converting the West Corridor into a light rail corridor, running alongside the Portland and Western Railroad tracks. That, to me, I think is the more ideal way to serve our light rail system expansion. It's come into the public eye that the I-5 Rose Corridor rebuild project has the opposition to it. To me, I've never been able to agree with it. I think it is a worthy project. But this latest part of how it impacts the East Bank Esplanade, that I have to draw a line at, I think, and submit that the design that I've been proposing and submitted already to the council completely removes that ramp and moves the whole 5-5 away from the riverbank. So I was hoping that our new council members and Tom Hughes would have been here today because I wanted to address them as well. But this will do for now.
And as a reminder, one can always also submit things in writing. So thank you.
Say again?
Oh, one can also submit writing as well for folks who were not here.
I know, but it doesn't...
I understand, but you have both of those options.
I have to speak to the public in general.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Jones.
Good afternoon, Metro Council. I am here today to speak on behalf of my sea lion and salmon friends who are struggling to survive in a Superfund site called the Willamette River. What we know is that salmon need water below 68 degrees to survive, not just salmon. Pacific lamprey, sturgeon, these are cold water fish that need cold flowing water to survive. So what we know with climate change, all species right now who rely on cold water for their survival are at great risk for extinction. With our growing region, I am very concerned about our sea lion and salmon being scapegoated on a Superfund site called the Willamette River in lieu of toxic remediation. toxic remediation of our waterways will actually protect and increase populations of endangered fish, as well as protect all the other species in the region that rely on water for their survival, because we know with warming water comes deadly algae blooms. And when we have algae blooms behind the reservoirs and the dams, which the Army Corps of Engineers stated in 2014 that they were going to stop reporting on these algae blooms, puts everybody at risk. So my concern is, as well, is the studies show that culverts, water diversions, and water bypasses created by construction or created by urban growth kill fish if they are not appropriately fitted with fish screens. And fish, it has been shown that properly installed and maintained fish screens helps protect endangered species, as well as the public's investment in protecting these species. See, scapegoating sea lions and targeting sleeping, beautiful, majestic animals as they sleep on a Superfund site does absolutely nothing to protect cold water fish for future generations. All it does is target sea lions. And humans have already done that. I mean, we've already killed off the original pods of everything that lived in this river. I mean, the only reason why we have any wildlife at all is because of the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act of 1972 and the Marine Mammal Protection Act of 1972.
Thank you.
So I would like to see ODOT have to meet fish passage criteria to not being able to buy their way out, but actually work a plan to help these species survive.
Thank you for your testimony. Just as a reminder, there will be opportunities to testify on the other items. Please just submit a blue card to our clerk, and we will make sure that you have that opportunity. We now have an opportunity to move to resolutions. Am I right about that? Are we doing resolutions right now? Okay. To move to resolutions. Resolution on our agenda is resolution number 19-4982. For the purpose of affirming Metro's dedication to an accurate 2020 census count, I would ask Rahi Reddy, Metro Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Program Director, for a presentation. And joining Ms. Reddy will be Ernest Hayes, who is staff with Metro Council.
Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and councilors. We are here today presenting a resolution in support of the annual census day, which happened on April 1st. We've joined together with our county partners at Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County to start a public agency convening around the 2020 census and getting a complete count for our communities. And I have our Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Rahi, with me today, because she will be much more able to answer any specific questions you have. But we did want to present this resolution. It's happening in concert with our county partners right now this week as well. And it's primarily to acknowledge that the count begins, and we'll start working on ensuring that our communities are accounted for in the 2020 census. So with that, I will open it up to any questions you may have.
Okay. Questions?
If I could.
Yes.
Rahi, can you tell us more about the work that we're doing to convene our regional partners and why it's so important to invest in this work?
President Peterson, I guess, and councilors, thank you for that question. Right now at Metro, we're hosting several conversations internally to determine in what ways we can best support really the complete count plan. As you know, we have numerous communities in our region who, for various reasons, are on their own will not participate in the census. And most of those communities are the exact same people that we need to participate and be able to share information about how they're experiencing life in this region. And so for Metro and for, in particular, for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Program, we are doing some work internally right now to figure out what are the best ways for Metro as an agency to support our local counties, our three counties, and our local jurisdictions in the work that they're really leading to ensure the communities in their districts are participating in the census, feel safe and secure to do so. In addition, we are also engaging conversations with some of our jurisdictional partners who are funding really direct community partnerships. So we know for many of the hard-to-count communities that the most important and trusted validators of participation in the census is to really see that communication come directly from the community-based organizations that work every day in their community. And so for Metro, we are urging, you know, we will be developing a plan for the agency on figuring out what are the best ways for us to continue to fund our community partners and to possibly increase some funding to community partners to do that work, to be the trusted validators in community and have the resources they need to reach every single person. And so I think that, you know, I would say that we're in conversations right now with our fellow jurisdictions and with our internal departments to figure out what's the best path forward and how can Metro strategically invest in the work that's happening in the region.
Thank you. Councilor Craddock.
I don't have a comment, I don't have a question, but just a comment. I recognize that the responsibility for the census is the counties. So Multnomah County, the commissions mm-hmm. on each county, Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas County, and of course the other counties in the state of Oregon. But we have learned a lot, and today we're going to have a presentation regarding some of the work that we've been doing, and particularly have staff in the audience that have been in the front lines on being able to that are working in our DEI plan. And, of course, this is coming out of the equity strategy that the Metro Council has put in place. So I hope and I assume that a lot of the work that we have experienced now and have some expertise will be shared and we'll be working with the counties in what we have learned on how to reach out to particularly communities of color. So I'm assuming you're already there. I just want to make that statement that we have a lot of experience and really proud of the work that we've been doing, and I think it really can help us help the counties with the work that they're doing to reach out to all people, and hopefully we can get more accurate data and data from everybody.
Thank you, Councilor Craddock. I would echo that, and I think one of the most important elements of the work that you're talking about is our approach to community engagement of really making sure that we are co-creating plans and programs, and in particular having community partners lead in the messaging and in the framing of how we talk about this. We've been told time and time again from our jurisdictional partners and from some of the work happening around the census that sometimes government itself is not the best messenger or has the exact right message for each of the different communities, and that really we should be taking the lead from our community-based organizations. And so our work, both for participation and funding and coordination with our communications department, is really going to be leaning strongly in that past practice that we have, but also to share that experience. And it's okay. It's good sometimes for our community partners to take the lead on how to communicate with communities and for us to leverage our resources to support them. Absolutely.
Thank you. Good news.
Councilor Lewis.
Yeah, thank you. I had the opportunity to join my county commission, Clackamas County, when they adopted a very similar resolution last week. So I'm really pleased to be joining my colleagues in raising this issue. When we think about what the census does, it is the opportunity for everybody to stand up and be counted, and it's our opportunity also to say, we see you, we validate you. But then it's the federal government's job to send some of that money back to Oregon. And the top 16 programs in Oregon, there's the ones that we think about and hear about a lot, from Medicaid to SNAP to mm-hmm. CHIP to Head Start, But in our kind of more selfish brains, we also need to remember it's highway planning dollars, mm-hmm. And it's vouchers for housing. That is innately part of our program at this point. So in terms of when we talk about school lunch programs and foster care and speak to our values as who we are, we also need to remember it's directly affecting the work that we do. So thank you, colleagues, and thank you for bringing this forward. Are there any opportunities that you see for us to coordinate with more unusual partners in actually doing this work? I know that there's plans out of this resolution, but anybody that we should be highlighting here today of being forward thinking on census?
So thank you, Councilor Lewis, for that question. Number one, we are working with our research center, Metro, to develop a fact sheet for our staff and for leaders on, in particular, Metro programming, Metro work that is particularly impacted by census. So we're hoping to have a much more kind of localized to Metro framework for all of you to be able to share and know. Additionally, I think we are exploring what are the gaps that Metro could explore as an agency to support with our partners. So maybe at that level of, you know, kind of the partners or even areas that may not get as much attention because of a lack of resources from our local jurisdiction. So we're still in the process of trying to understand. I think everybody's in the forming stage right now, and we're not necessarily right at the level of having an exact plan for the region. And we're taking some leadership and learning from Clackamas County, Washington County, and Multnomah County about where do they feel like resources need to be more strengthened. So we will be happy to come back to you and be able to share a much more precise picture of our involvement and our support and possibly where that gap analysis leads us in terms of where we would focus our energy.
Thank you.
Any other comments? I would like to make a comment, which is I think it's important to recognize that at the federal level and the federal administration, there are efforts to actually tamp down the number of folks that are getting counted. And that particularly affects our black and brown communities, our traditionally underserved communities, our immigrant and refugee populations. And so as I say with many things that are happening at the federal level right now, it's more important than ever that we take action locally and we double down on our efforts to make sure, in this case, that everybody's getting counted. And we have some real dollars at stake, federal funding at stake. We also have a congressional representative seat at stake. That's huge. So it's really important work. I thank you so much for doing this. And now, hearing no other comments, I think we can call the vote.
Motion.
Oh, we need a motion first. That would help, wouldn't it?
I make a motion to approve resolution number 19-4982.
I'll second.
Thank you. You may call the vote. Or please call the roll, please.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase?
Aye. Resolution is approved. Thank you. Next, we have the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Diversity Award presentation. And I do have a comment about that before we begin. Today, we are taking time to honor and recognize Metro employees whose actions and behaviors have helped us grow as a public agency. In January, Metro celebrated our fifth annual Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Awareness Month. We invited employees to engage by nominating their colleagues or project teams for their contributions to embracing diversity, advancing regional equity, and practicing inclusion. And for the third year, we nominated staff for the Bill Tolbert Diversity Award. As you know, Bill was our first diversity program manager who brought the diversity action plan to life with his gentle and strategic way until his passing in November of 2016. I know a lot of us worked very closely with Bill and miss him a lot. So to honor his legacy, we created this annual award that will recognize one Metro employee. The nominee has been selected and will be announced and honored at the spring Metro All-Staff meeting. This year, we continued the tradition of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Difference Maker Awards by recognizing the DEI champions throughout the agency. Today, we are here to honor those champions. The Metro Council is grateful for your contributions, your talent, and your commitment to help us be a regional leader of advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion. And now I'll turn it over to, and I would like to say we have a lot of those folks that were part of the awards, and maybe you can just at least speak to that when we get to it. I'll now turn it over to our diversity, equity, and inclusion team to call upon the recipients of the awards.
Thank you, Deputy Council President Chase and Metro Councilors. My name is Rahi Reddy. I am the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Today, we're really here to honor the Metro staff who are leading our diversity, equity, and inclusion work as champions in the agency with the DEI Difference Maker Awards. And although we love to give every single one of our Metro staff who lead this work an award, but we had the tough role of having to choose a few to honor this year. So every year we do assemble a nominations committee led by Nyla Moore and Grady Wheeler, and really do the hard work of getting the nominations from staff and leaders. So this year we organized our awards into three categories: the role model, the continual learner, and the innovative thinker. Because to really advance DEI work, you kind of have to wear a lot of different hats and be in various roles of learning and creating as ongoing. So first, for the role model award, really represents someone who talks the talk and walks the walk. It's not just what they say. It's how they act that signals diversity, equity, and inclusion are really truly important at Metro. They exert influence by helping make progress on our DEI work. They also ensure that all team members experience inclusion at every opportunity, and they strive to develop and retain their diverse team members by mentoring, coaching, and providing constructive feedback. So this year's DEI Difference Maker Role Model Award is the Oregon Zoo's Jennifer Payne. I don't know if Jennifer's here. So the next award is the continual learner. It's someone who's an effective champion who knows that it's important to understand that we are constantly in learning mode, that it's someone who takes advantage of the various opportunities both inside the agency and outside of Metro. So this year's DEI Difference Maker Continual Learner Award is our Property and Environmental Services Youth Programs team. So Kimberly Taylor, Darwin Eustachio, Nicole Hernandez-Mars, Lake Thielen, Ken Pitts, Jamie Rapaski, Jacqueline Garcia Delgado, and John Mayer. Yeah, please do. And then the last award we're going to mention today is the innovative thinker. So someone who believes change is possible and sees opportunities where others see obstacles. Someone who takes an innovative approach that results in increased diversity in some aspect and moving toward more equitable outcomes with processes that really foster those actions and behaviors. An innovative thinker, as we said before at our celebration, is this work in DEI is about creativity. It's about constantly trying new things and being okay of sometimes being the only one to do it until everyone catches on. So we're really excited to announce the DEI Difference Maker Innovative Thinker Award to Property Environmental Services Enrique Vargas. So that's all we got. So thank you.
Thank you. What about the bill? Did you mention the bill?
Okay. We'll do it at the offset.
Oh, right. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. comments or questions? Councillor President?
I don't have any questions. I would like to make a comment. You know, as someone now that is in my final term on the Metro Council and got the opportunity to participate in the decision that the Metro Council made to establish an equity strategy. And I have to say, I've learned so much about, and really am just beginning to really understand the value and the influence that strategy has. And you in this audience are the ones that are, of course, putting this all into place. And I've been just really appreciate what I've learned on how we go about making sure that we are, you know, are more inclusive and make sure that we have a diverse group of people that work here and the people we interact with and, of course, the people we work with in the community. And so I just want to say thank you. I've learned so much and appreciate that you are my teachers and have helped me learn more about this and the value this has for our region. So thank you so much for your commitment and your interest and all of your and your creativity. And so I just want to say thank you very much. I really appreciate all that you've done to help me be better at this also. So thank you.
Well, congratulations, everybody. Y'all are the reason that it's so easy to come to Metro Tuesdays and Thursdays. No. Just kidding. You know, before Metro was even on my personal radar and working in community and community organizing, y'all were and continue to be the shining lights of what it means to partner on these types of efforts. Now, any time that I visit any of the jurisdictions that are within the Metro region, all I hear from the staff is, you have such wonderful staff that are innovative, mission-oriented, problem solvers, get-to-yes people. And it's just such an honor to work with you and to see the work that you're doing. And I think it's transformational, as a lot of folks have mentioned, and I think we're leading the country in a lot of ways, and you're leading the country in a lot of ways. So, gracias.
I would just comment that there was no other comments. I would just comment that, you know, as somebody who has participated in our equity, diversity, and inclusion strategies, it's clear, you know, we've come quite some distance from those days when Bill Tolbert was really kind of in many ways a lone voice, kind of pushing us in the right direction. But at the same time, he was doing that. There was a groundswell of people at Metro that really wanted to engage in this work, and that's what it became kind of an organic process that emerged. And these awards, I think, are such a fabulous way to show that work is happening. It is, I think, many of us recognize that we have not achieved what we need to achieve, and there's a lot more work to do. But we are making some pretty incredible strides. And these awards are really an opportunity to say, hey, community, there are some things happening here at Metro. People are thinking creatively and advancing equity in all kinds of different ways. And I think that's what's really valuable to me. One of the things that's really valuable about this award is a chance to share those stories and inspire people and get them motivated to do more.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're ready to move on. Thank you, everybody, for coming and participating in this part of our agenda. We now move on to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of four items. One, resolution number 19-4971. Two, resolution number 19-4974. Three, the minutes for our March 14, 2019 Council special presentation. And four, the minutes for the March 21, 2019 Council meeting. Is there a motion?
Move approval of consent.
I'll second.
Moved by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor Craddock. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say nay. The consent agenda is approved. We now move on to our first reading and public hearing for ordinance number 19-1434. The first read and public hearing. First ordinance is for the purpose of approving an increased tonnage allocation and authorizing the chief operating officer to issue an amended solid waste facility franchise for GSS Transfer LLC. And Mr. Brower, we now have presenting Mr. Brower. Metro Interim Property and Environmental Services Director, and Hila, am I pronouncing it right?
It's Hila.
Hila, excuse me. Ritter, Metro Interim Solid Waste Compliance Manager, who will provide a brief presentation.
Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and councilors. We're here today to introduce a franchise amendment recommendation for a solid waste transfer station, namely Gresham Sanitary Service, that was first approved to operate as a transfer facility by the Metro Council in 2016. As a preface to the staff report that Hila will present in just a moment, I wanted to remind you about Metro's legal authorities within the regional solid waste system and put this decision in context for you. Why is it coming to you? Since this is the first regulatory matter before this particular council. Under state law and its own independent home rule charter authority, Metro has broad authority and responsibility for planning, managing, and overseeing the regional solid waste system. Metro manages the region's solid waste system on behalf of the public and relies on the recently adopted regional waste plan for guidance to address critical issues such as protecting the environment and human health, conserving natural resources, advancing environmental literacy, fostering economic well-being for all, ensuring the resilience of our garbage and recycling system, and providing excellent and equitable services. The regulatory action before you today is in keeping with those responsibilities. As you know, Metro has the legal authority to direct all solid waste to its own public facilities.
Yes.
This is true for food waste, construction and demolition waste, household garbage, and recyclables. However, past Metro councils have determined that it is currently in the public interest to include some private sector companies in the solid waste system to provide some waste services directly, such as dry waste processing, wet waste transfer and disposal, and processing of various recyclable materials. The Metro Council has also determined that Metro should actively manage the system in a variety of ways, including owning and operating facilities, planning the future of the system, and implementing the regional waste plan. Under Metro's Solid Waste Code in Title V, the Metro Council has retained the authority to make regulatory decisions regarding matters related to what we call putrescible waste or wet waste. The Council has delegated the authority to the COO for matters related to non-putrescible waste or dry waste. So this ordinance is in keeping with Metro's legal authorities to regulate and oversee the regional solid waste system. This ordinance asks you to consider whether to increase the tonnage allocation to a specific private transfer station for calendar year 2019. Hila will now provide a brief statement or a brief report, followed by Mr. Matt Miller, who will be presenting on behalf of his facility and his request on this ordinance. Next week will be your meeting to decide whether to amend Gresham's franchise. I'll turn it over to Hila.
Hello, Deputy Council President Chase and councilors. For the record, my name is Hila Ritter, and I'm currently serving as interim manager for the Solid Waste Compliance Group within Property and Environmental Services. As Roy mentioned, if adopted, this ordinance will authorize the COO to amend the franchise for Gresham Sanitary Services, also known as GSS Transfer, to increase the amount of putrescible waste that it may accept in 2019 at its transfer station located at 2131 Northwest Birdsdale Avenue in Gresham. Gresham Sanitary is currently authorized to accept up to 23,687 tons annually and is seeking to increase that to 49,000 tons for calendar year 2019. Gresham Sanitary seeks this change to ensure a more profitable operation, expand its operation to allow other local third-party haulers located nearby, and avoid the added cost of travel time and tipping fees of using other transfer stations. Gresham Sanitary is a local, family-owned waste collection business established in 1948. In 1992, Gresham Sanitary began operating as a solid waste consolidation and reload facility for its own hauling company. And the facility has held a DEQ solid waste transfer station permit since 2009 and a Metro franchise since 2016. Gresham Sanitary currently collects waste from its franchise routes and transports it to its transfer station for consolidation and top loading into transfer trailers for transport to Wasco County Landfill. And Gresham Sanitary has a good history of regulatory compliance. While approval of this ordinance may reduce the amount of waste received at Metro's transfer stations, the impact to the Solid Waste Fund operating costs and revenues are short-term. Staff finds that the proposed ordinance is consistent with and supports the goals of the recently adopted 2030 Regional Waste Plan, and it also complies with the Metro Transfer System Configuration Policy, which was adopted by the Metro Council in July 2016. Specifically, approval of this ordinance would result in more efficient off-route transport of solid waste, which would help reduce greenhouse gas emissions and provide other public benefits. Additionally, it will help support a small, locally based business that has been collecting solid waste in the region since 1948. It is important to note that this proposed increased tonnage allocation is limited to calendar year 2019. As you are aware, staff is developing administrative rule that sets forth a detailed process for determining and adjusting future tonnage allocations beginning in 2020. Gresham Sanitary will continue to collect and remit a community enhancement fee of $1 per ton on the wet waste or processable waste that it receives under the and under the proposed franchise, this could yield an increase of over $20,000 per year for a total of $49,000 in 2019 to be used for rehabilitation and enhancement projects in the area surrounding the facility. In addition to this ordinance, at next week's meeting on April 11th, we will bring forward a companion resolution on the consent agenda that would authorize the COO to amend the non-system license, the NSL, for Gresham Sanitary Service that authorizes the transport of garbage to the landfill. So approval of both the franchise and the NSL will align the inbound tonnage at the transfer station with the outbound tonnage destined for disposal at the landfill. So to be clear, under the ordinance before you, Gresham Sanitary's current activities will not change. The only proposed change is an increase in the amount of waste it may accept and then transport to a landfill for disposal in 2019. So the franchise expires on December 31st of 2019, and staff will base future tonnage recommendations on the tonnage allocation methodology that is currently being developed. If this ordinance is adopted as proposed, the franchise would become effective 90 days after its adoption. However, the tonnage allocation of 49,000 tons applies to the full calendar year of 2019, so staff does not recommend an emergency clause. Staff does recommend that the council adopt this ordinance and authorize the COO to amend the franchise to increase the tonnage allocation for Gresham Sanitary Service for calendar year 2019, as attached to the ordinance as Exhibit A. We are happy to provide further details or answer any questions that you may have about the proposed franchise amendment.
Thank you. Did you want to have Mr. Miller's comments now or after questions?
As you please.
Mr. Miller, why don't you come forward, and at least while we see if there are any questions right now from council.
Do you want to do that as part of the public hearing, perhaps, or do you want him to?
I think they mentioned that he would be part of the presentation, so I didn't know.
I can
consider that outside the testimony, okay, but you're welcome to do it either way.
Is that okay? Okay.
The floor is yours.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you coming and speaking.
Yes. Thank you. Deputy Council President Chase and councilors. My name is Matt Miller. So I'm the Vice President of GSS Transfer as well as Gresham Sanitary Service. Both of those entities are located at 2131 Northwest Birchdale Avenue in Gresham. And I'm here today to encourage you to vote yes on the Ordinance 19-1434. I think the staff report and the documents that accompany it do a thorough job at documenting the journey of my application as well as the public process. I'd like to highlight just a few things about our application. By voting yes to adopt the ordinance, you would be promoting the reduction of greenhouse gases, mainly because of the decreased travel time of collection trucks in Gresham and East Multnomah County that could now use our facility. You would be putting downward pressure on rates due to this operational efficiency as well as tip fee cost savings at our facility. You would be supporting a small, locally owned, family-owned business that participates in the region's solid waste system. GSS Transfer and Gresham Sanitary are an active helper in increasing the well-being of our community. We support groups like My Father's House, the Salvation Army, the Gresham Barlow Education Foundation, and many, many others. This tonnage increase allows us to continue to be a valuable community member in Gresham and East Multnomah County. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those as well.
Okay, one more chance for questions from council or any comments. Hearing...
I'll have a comment. I need to ask the Metro attorney, at what point would I need to make my comment? Is it appropriate now? Okay, thank you. I would like to make sure the council is aware and the public is. Mr. Miller was invited to meet with the Northwest Neighborhood Association in Gresham. Gresham has 16 neighborhood associations. GSS Transfer and Gresham Sanitary are located in the Northwest Neighborhood Association. And so the community wanted to meet with Mr. Miller and learn more about his plans for this expansion. I was invited to attend and just sat and listened to the discussion and didn't participate. So I just want to make sure you're aware of that and the public is aware of that as we move forward to a vote at our next meeting.
Thank you. And on the topic of voicing perspectives around this facility, I will gavel and we now have a hearing on proposed ordinance number 19-1434, and I will now open a public hearing. If there is anybody that would like to testify, please come forward. We have one card. I'd like to call Shannon Martin forward. City of Gresham.
Thank Good you. Afternoon, Deputy President Chase and Metro Council. I'm Shannon Martin, Recycling and Solid Waste Program Manager for the City of Gresham. Thanks for letting me allow to speak today. I'm here today just to demonstrate support for Metro staff's recommendations to authorize the amendment of Gresham Sanitary's non-system license to increase their tonnage limit for transport and disposal of petrusible waste. Gresham's planning and transportation staff have reviewed the application and have concluded that there are no additional city requirements needed to comply with their request to Metro. Approval of the resolution would also allow our license haulers an efficient off-route travel alternative, which supports, as Hyla mentioned in her staff report and Mr. Miller, there is anticipated reduction in fuel use, costs, and greenhouse gas emissions. Given that we do have some local haulers that are traveling to Metro South and West Van in Washington, and given Gresham Sanitary's tip fee is consistent with Metro's, we do anticipate lower expenses to certain haulers, which would be a direct benefit to our ratepayers in Gresham. In fact, approval of this resolution may lessen our need to request a rate increase in the coming months, given the cost savings potential for 2019. Lastly, I'd just like to thank Metro staff for attending the Northwest Neighborhood Association meeting and presenting the process to the community and answering any questions. That information was extremely valuable to that association, and they really appreciated Metro and folks being there to answer any questions. I'd also like to express my appreciation for Metro staff, including the disposal alternatives in case of unforeseen emergencies like ice in the gorge. Increasing resiliency throughout our system and ensuring material can continue to flow through these private transfer stations in East County is a direct benefit to our community. So I just want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this matter? If so, please come forward. Seeing no one, I hereby close the public hearing. Second reading, council consideration, and vote are scheduled for Thursday, April 11th. Thank you. We now move back to resolutions. First is resolution number 19-4963 for the purpose of adopting the 2021 to 2024 Metropolitan Transit Improvement Program Policy Statement for the Portland metro area. I now ask Grace Cho and Ted Leibold, Metro staff, for a presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Council President Chase and members of the council. Every 3 years, we undertake updates to both our Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program and our allocation of regional transportation funds through the Regional Flexible Fund allocation. So we're here today to conclude with the first phase of that of those processes. And the first item up for your consideration is the approval of the policy update to the Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program. And with that, Grace Cho will walk you through her presentation.
Good afternoon, Deputy Metro Council President Chase and members of Metro Council. Again, my name is Grace Cho, and I'm a senior transportation planner here in our Metro's planning department. And I'm here to present the 2021 through 2024 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program policy statement for the Portland Metro region. So to begin, the Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program, or MTIP for short, is a federally required document which allows the region to expend federal transportation dollars. It's comprised of three components. One part is a list of regionally significant investments scheduled to be made in the region in the next four fiscal years. A second part is a written narrative which includes a description of the prioritization processes of those regionally significant investments, as well as a discussion of the evaluation in how these investments advance regional goals and objectives. The process description and evaluation is important since these investments are being decided by different entities, namely Metro, ODOT, TriMet, and SMART. And it helps to provide an understanding of how these entities took into consideration regional goals and objectives in the selection of these investments. The third and final part of the MTIP is a description of administrative procedures for managing and implementing the MTIP itself. So the purpose of the MTIP during the development and prior to its adoption is to give guidance to the disparate funding decision processes on what objectives we as regional partners are aiming to achieve with transportation investments, as well as being a reminder on what requirements that we are supposed to be following and need to be met as part of that decision-making process. Once we actually adopt the MTIP, the purpose transitions into a monitoring tool. This is to assist the region in a tracking progress of and project implementation and funding availability. And this really helps us, helps Metro to continually confirm eligibility and federal compliance in order for us to be able to say to our federal partners that we are eligible to continue to expend these funds. So I just noted earlier in my presentation, but I wanted to speak to a little bit more some of the key partners which play a larger role in the development of the Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program. There's three main key partners. That's metropolitan planning organizations like Metro, State Department of Transportation like ODOT, and then the transit agencies which serve within our metropolitan region. So in our case, that's TriMet and SMART. ODOT, Metro, TriMet, and SMART serve as key partners because we either directly receive, spend, or allocate federal transportation dollars. And the different funding allocation processes ultimately make up that composition of regionally significant investments that gets shown in the MTIP. A couple of allocation examples are shown associated with each partner agency. The funding allocation Metro is responsible for as the MPO is called the Regional Flexible Fund, which is circled in red. This is just one element of the MTIP, and you'll be hearing more about that as the next council agenda item. Metro, as the Metropolitan Planning Organization, also carries an additional role in the leading and development of the MTIP in the coordination of investments. So as part of Resolution 194963, Council is being asked to take action on the 2021 through 2024 Metropolitan the MTIP policy direction. The MTIP policy is direction to partners in developing and implementing the upcoming MTIP. In this case, that policy direction is focused on fiscal years 21 through 24. The MTIP policy itself is not new. The region typically adopts a new MTIP policy which with each cycle, with the most recent being the 2018 through 2021 MTIP policy statement. Previous cycles, the MTIP policy and regional flexible fund policy direction were both brought forward jointly as a single document. For this cycle, the policy statement for the MTIP has been separated from the flexible funds to provide a little bit more clarity between the two items. So as the region's in progress in developing the 2021 through 2024 MTIP, the MTIP policy direction is primarily carrying forward existing adopted MTIP policies, but with updates to reflect newly adopted regional plans, including the 2018 Regional Transportation Plan, as well as policy direction to funding allocations administered by our regional partners, such as ODOT, TriMet, and SMART. In total, four MTIP policies are proposed. The first two are related to outcomes the region desires to see from its transportation investments and just general administration. So MTIP Policy 1 affirms the 2018 RTP is the overarching direction for investments proposed in the 2021 through 2024 MTIP. And this includes an emphasis on the priorities which emerged out of the 2018 RTP, which are safety, equity, addressing climate change, and managing congestion. MTIP Policy 2, simply stated, directs the region to comply with federal regulations to remain eligible for those funds. This includes specific regulations pertaining to the development and administration of the MTIP, but also includes overarching federal regulations and policies such as civil rights, environmental protection, and the new performance-based programming requirements to come out of federal transportation reauthorization. The third and fourth MTIP policies relate to the coordination of investments to help facilitate progress towards implementing the region's goals and objectives for the transportation system. MTIP Policy 3 directs the region to pursue the regional finance approach as updated. The regional finance approach, first adopted in 2009 and subsequently with each cycle, expresses the region's desired way of funding the transportation system by linking funding sources to transportation project types. And the approach reflects new transportation revenues to emerge since 2016 and changes to various federal transportation programs. MTIP Policy 4 directs the region to coordinate on competitive funding opportunities, especially at the federal level and across different funding allocation processes taking place within the region. This is ultimately, the fourth policy ultimately is formalizing an existing practice our region has done for over a decade and has been very successful. As of today, the development of the 2021 through 2024 MTIP is still early in the process, where the process is nearing the end of phase one, marked by the adoption of this policy direction. Throughout the spring and summer, the funding allocations will begin to take place, or in some cases, they'll be continuing since some of our partners have started their funding allocation processes prior to the summer. Then the packaging of the MTIP will enter into phase three in the winter of 2019, where the draft lists will get built, the performance assessment will happen, the process descriptions will also get drafted, and other compliance documentation is brought together. And it is anticipated that in about a year from now, spring 2020, Metro staff brings forward a public review draft of the 2021 through 2024 MTIP. And the Metro Council will be requested to take action on the 2021 through 2024 MTIP in summer of 2020. So, as I mentioned earlier, today I'm here to request the Council take action on the resolution. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
I actually have a question. not a comment. So with regard to the MTIP and the federal regulation side, how do those regulations, if they at all change, depending on what the administration's direction is? So given this cycle of MTIP, what does that look like?
I can answer that. So it's federal regulation happens on several levels. First, there's the authorizing legislation that happens once approximately every 5 to 6 years. It sets sort of more policy direction, which then the federal agencies like Federal Highway Administration or Federal Transit Administration that then have to implement them, they go through formal rulemaking. And the rulemaking actually says how you're going to implement the sort of overarching congressional legislation that happens. But it has a formal process, and then that's what we follow in terms of carrying out the rulemaking is what we follow when carrying out that legislation. Sometimes even the rulemaking can have some gray area and ambiguity. So we have federal staff in Salem for Federal Highway and in Seattle for Federal Transit Administration that we'll go to for clarification. And sometimes that can be clarified through executive orders, those types of things, which is influenced by, obviously, the administration.
All right. Thank you.
I don't have a question. I have a comment, though. Of course, this document is really going to be very important for us for the next, in particular, this, since we are working on a regional investment strategy on what we might do to find a way to be able to build more of the projects that are in our regional transportation plan. So the direction and the policies that we establish in this are really going to have significant influence on those projects that we decide to fund. So thank you for the work that you put into this. I know this is something that we do on a regular basis is update this, but I think of this as this document in particular at this time is extra important because it has significant influence on how we will shape that investment plan.
Thank you. I will now call.
We'd like to make a comment, just kind of a history on this. And even getting to this point, this policy direction goes through quite a process. Of course, we have an existing MTIP policy. And when we updated the RTP and looking at the next funding round, the next MTIP for these dates requires us to take a look at that policy to make sure that the existing policy still is in alignment with what we've when we're going forward. And so the policy was reviewed by staff and adjustments made to it so that it would be in compliance with both the newly updated RTP and also our regional climate smart strategy. And then that went to a technical advisory committee, which then made recommendations or refinements to it. Once those were made, then that went to JPAC, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee, which Councillor Craddock chairs and I sit upon, where it's reviewed by all of our regional partners. And in this case, as was noted in the staff report, passed through that committee with very little comment and with general agreement at that table. And then the last month, the JPAC voted to recommend passage of this policy document that we see before us today. So it goes through quite a lot of vetting process, even to get to this point, just to create the policy, which we then use to actually create the MTIP. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Seconded.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, I call on our clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Lewis?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase?
Aye. Resolution is approved. Next resolution is number... Thank you. Next resolution is number 19-4959 for the purpose... yes, you will stay and maybe even bring up a couple guests. Next is resolution number 19-4959 for the purpose of adopting the 2022-2024 Regional Flexible Funds Allocation Policy Statement for the Portland metropolitan area. I invite Margie Broadway, Metropolitan Planning and Development Deputy Director, Dan Kampf, and Ted Labeled, Metro staff, to come forward for a presentation. You're just there in support if we need
Margie's going to stay, yeah. So this is part two. So again, I think The MTIP is the broader overall administrative mechanism by which we look at all of our federal investments in the region, but then more specifically, some of those federal investments come directly through Metro to be allocated to specific transportation projects and programs, and we also have a policy proposal before you today that Dan Kampf is going to walk you through.
Thanks, Ted. Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and members of the Council. My name is Dan Kampf. I'm a transportation planner for Metro, and I am here today to present to you Resolution 19-4959, the 2022-24 Regional Flexible Funds Allocation Policy. As you are aware, this is one of the responsibilities Metro has as a metropolitan planning organization to conduct a process for how we spend the federal funding that is allocated to the MPO. We are at the outset of that process right now, and the first step is to adopt a policy direction for how we will invest these funds. So we're here today to ask your consideration and action on this policy report. This policy document affirms the direction that staff received from you earlier this year when we brought the opening of the flexible funds process to you for your input and guidance. This was, in essence, to continue the previous allocation methodology that we followed in previous cycles and to maintain the funding focus areas that have served the region over the past several flexible fund cycles. But to also recognize that we had just recently adopted the 2018 Regional Transportation Plan and that the project outcomes, particularly in Step 2, should really be aligned with the priorities that emerged from that discussion. And the priorities are here on the slide, but they are equity, safety, climate, and congestion relief. So the policy report that you're considering today follows that direction, and it follows this same two-step funding framework to ensure that we're following through on our bond payment commitments as well as continuing to invest in our region-wide programs. And in the Step 2 project categories, we've made adjustments to the criteria to reflect the four RTP policy priorities that you saw in the previous slide. We've also incorporated enhanced transit concept street elements into the list of technical design elements to help transit work better, as well as to make cycling and walking safer, and also to make improve freight movement reliability. We've also added in risk assessment steps to better ensure that the projects we're funding are also being built as they're designed in scope, on time, and on budget. This is the funding estimate for this cycle. It's approximately $142 million, and you can see how it's divided into the Step 1 and Step 2 categories. As we showed you on a previous slide, 75% of that Step 2 amount is targeted towards active transportation projects, and the remaining 25% is designated for freight and economic development projects. And I'll also just note that in their approval to you, JPAC targeted $350,000 as a one-time investment to pay for Metro's portion of the Oregon Household Travel Survey. This is a survey that helps to inform our modeling and other data resource needs. So this is the full schedule for the rough process. I apologize for the small type, but you have seen this before. Your action will complete phase one of this timeline. I just will note that it's important to stay on schedule for the flexible funds allocation as it is a part of our MTIP process, and we need to maintain that schedule in order to maintain our ability to spend our federal funds. Just a bit more detail on the next steps. Pending your action today, we're opening a call for projects next Monday. Those proposals will be due towards the end of June. We'll spend the summer doing a technical evaluation and risk assessment of those projects, and we'll bring that information out to the public and to you for a public hearing in September, so you can gather public input on the projects and the impacts and benefits that they will have to various communities around the region. Moving into fall and winter, JPAC will consider and approve a final package of investments that we will bring back to you next January. So those are my remarks I had for you today. I'll take any questions that you might have, and thank you very much.
Questions?
In the style of a counselor question, I have a question comment. So thank you so much for this work. And I just want to highlight in particular the work that was done to make sure that the 25% traditionally just called freight, we're now incorporating true economic development initiatives and to not only the title, but also the policy objectives underneath. And the small projects, particularly, you know, curbs that accommodate large trucks and loading and all of that getting in and out, that really is going to reduce congestion on our neighborhood streets. So thank you for that work. I guess I shouldn't say neighborhood, I should say industrial streets. But sometimes it's one and the same with how we've done our planning. And I guess in looking at the criteria spelled out through our objectives of equity and climate and congestion and safety, are there opportunities for us to continue to innovate in this economic, you know, the economic development initiatives as we're putting the call out for projects?
Yes, we are encouraging local respondents to the call for projects to, you know, inform us of what their needs are and what they've heard from their communities, as what are the best ways that they can respond to those needs. That's all part of how we're considering and evaluating the projects.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
I will now entertain a motion for approval.
Move approval.
I'll second.
Moved by Councillor Dirksen, seconded by Councillor Craddock. Any other comments? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Yes.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Deputy Council President Chase.
Aye. The resolution is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Big moment.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think so.
Now we have the policy. We spend
the foundation is laid.
We will now move into Chief Operating Officer Communications.
Two things. First, I just want to say a big thank you to our Regional Illegal Dumping Patrol for the work they're doing this week along Sullivan's Gulch. Once again, we're doing a multi-jurisdictional effort. So thank you also to our government partners. We are now cleaning Sullivan's Gulch like four times a year. We collect over 8 tons of trash every time we do it. It takes 4 days. I know some people think it's just a result of houselessness. It's not. It's just a consequence of living in 2019 that folks feel like it's okay to throw their solid waste down Sullivan's Gulch. But thank you to the Metro staff and the other agencies that join us in this cleanup effort because it's really important. And if you see the media coverage by KGW, just say congratulations to Tiffany or Ken Ray for the really good work they've done with the press. Does somebody have a question about that?
I had an interesting fact that I learned, I think came through the grapevine from our staff,
right,
which is that 70% of the waste that we see kind of out on the streets is from people from housed.
Yeah, from people who opt out of local collection service and don't also choose to self-haul to a transfer station. It is another sign of economic distress, so I don't want to make light of what it reflects. But
sure, but it's helpful to understand where the problems are coming from.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to make sure you all know is we have two upcoming engagements around the potential Parks and Nature bond. One is tomorrow afternoon. Parks and Nature team will be holding a conversation with the Indigenous community and local government partners, and so we'll let you know the results of all that feedback. And then on Monday, the stakeholder table is having a meeting to review sort of the draft framework that's going to eventually turn into the COO recommendation to you in mid-May. So if you're available Monday afternoon, hopefully you'll drop in for a little while on the stakeholder table meeting. That is all I have.
Thank you. Any questions for the COO? Mm-hmm. Councilor Communications? Councilor Lewis.
Yes, thank you. My, what, a few busy days. I have a couple of reports. So first off, yesterday I had the opportunity to attend the MERC meeting. We heard our general manager and venue business reports, and it's been really busy and in good times, even while we are seeing OCC under construction. March is going to likely be the busiest month on record for the entire history of that operation. So very impressive work going on at our venues. Additionally, we had an update from Mortenson Construction, who is building the Convention Center Hotel, and their construction update included not only where they are in construction, including already to punch outs on the fourth floor with some of the rooms, but also their social equity update. And just wanted to let you know that they are really on track to hit goals, or at least do really excellent work. They had a goal of 20% MWESB firms as their subs, and they're at 27.7%, so far exceeding that. They had a goal of 20% of hours done by apprenticeship participants, and they're at 28%. So those are two places where they're far exceeding. There was a goal to be at 38% POC labor participation, and they're at 28.9%, so just shy. But that's 10% above the average in the market region right now. So shy of goal, but overperforming by a significant margin. And then similarly with women workforce participation, the goal was set at 15%, and they are at 7.9%. But compared to the local labor market participation at 3.2%, again, they are overperforming. So looking at not only the product of how that hotel is coming together, but their dedication to not only pursue these goals, but be transparent about where they are doing well and where they're still continuing to face challenges, even while throwing resources at meeting them, was really good to see. So in addition to going to MERC yesterday, I attended the Rethinking Health Clackamas County Public Health Week presentation and was able to let folks in the public health community in Clackamas County know about our work. Healthcare includes housing, and so asking that community to engage in the housing bond, but also, you know, when you see access to nature and public transportation, those are social determinants of health. So asking the public health community to engage in our future-looking work as well. Finally, and Councillor Dirksen, I don't really want to step too much on your toes, but the two of us had the opportunity to attend the Zoo Foundation board meeting, the Board of Trustees meeting this morning. We heard some really good presentations on work that's being done on communications at the zoo, and we got to hear about the foundation campaign, kickoff event, charitable giving, including what happens at end-of-life gifts, but also a very clear presentation of what's being done to plan for strategic planning, so planning to plan. And I know strategic plan meetings are going to be happening in our offices to know how we're going to engage there. And then one final fun thing that's happening with the Zoo Foundation is they were just awarded a 4-star. That's the highest level rating you can get, 4 stars, not, you know, a Yelp 5. A 4-star rating by Charity Navigator. So that's a big deal and good work by Foundation of managing their resources and also working with public agency to make sure that they're seeing impact from the work. So those are my reports.
We also got to interact with an extremely beautiful red-tailed hawk.
Yeah. Oh, name nice. Sundance.
I have a few updates. Last Saturday, I attended the Cornelius Place grand opening. So that's first floor library, second floor affordable housing for seniors. 44 units. Metro invested $220,000 over the course of the project. It was very well attended, beautiful facility. Encourage you all to come out and see it one day in the illustrious District 4. Earlier this week, Councillor Dirksen and I had the opportunity to present to the Beaverton City Council, and I think it went very well. They asked some good questions, had good feedback, and tonight the City of Beaverton is having a housing bond engagement session, which is really exciting. So I'm going to try and make it out to that. Also last night, I was here with Councillor Lewis and Councillor Craddock for Transportation Funding Task Force, and that conversation was, to say it succinctly, very juicy. I don't think I've ever seen a room of that many people that engaged for that long, and it was 8:30 and people did not want to leave. So a lot of things came out of that, and I'm excited for the staff report, but unfortunately they're not in the room, but I really want to recognize all of the Metro staff that helped create the modeling and the methodology for corridors, for identifying corridors and our value statements in that. And specifically want to call out Andy Shaw, Tyler Frisbee, and Margie Bradway, because they were grilled last night and they just elegantly took the heat. And I think the Transportation Task Force group is taking a leap of faith forward on a lot of good things. On a more personal note, next Friday, I'm the MC for the Tualatin River Keepers Gala, and Metro has a table. So if you guys want to come, and I'll make some climate change jokes here and there. it's not a joke. so I would love to see you there, and that's it.
Thank you.
I had the honor to attend the new development in Cornelius Place. I sat on the Nature Neighborhoods Committee, and which helped give them some funding for the nature that they will be putting in plants in the near future if they haven't already. But that was my first introduction to the opportunity to have a public facility with housing on top, and just really was impressed with that work and how that influenced me to think about our affordable housing bond and the value that these funds that we now have available can not only help build more housing for people in the region, but it can also help stimulate other projects that are of public benefit. And so I was so impressed with that project. It was really a creative and money. They had to reach out to so many different agencies and organizations to make it work. But it's really, congratulations to your community for making that happen, because it took a lot of work to achieve that. My observation last night is Councilor Lewis and Gonzalez and I observed or listened to the discussion around the investment committee that is going to be giving a recommendation to us at some point about our transportation investment plan, our strategy. I was interesting there. So now we're up to 75 corridors that are being considered. Staff, initially identified 60 corridors, and then the committee added the other 15. And so last night they were given the assignment to first do that first blush, if you want to call it blush. It's more challenging than that, to be able to begin to prioritize those projects. And I was kind of interesting watching. There's some anxiety. The committee was leaving with some anxiety and concern about how can we possibly do this? This is too challenging. And so I kind of was enjoying that anxiety.
Somebody else gets to see a little bit of like what the action's like for us.
But I appreciate the staff for being really creative with how they're going about this, because I recognize that this is really the work that they're going to be doing and bringing back to the next meeting. It's really that temperature test to see what they're going to be bringing back and what they're going to be suggesting. So it'll be really interesting to see what ends up on that first list, and it'll give us some insight about just how much work we have to come together and be able to identify a group of corridors that we can afford to build.
Thank you. Any other updates? Hearing none. Let's see. Seeing no further discussion, the council meeting is adjourned. The next regular council meeting is scheduled for Thursday, April 11th at 2 p.m. at the Metro Regional Center Council Chamber.